Our top story is a distressing one coming in from Jammu and Kashmir, where now a Golgappa hawker from Bihar and a carpenter from Uttar Pradesh have been shot dead by terrorists in Jammu and Kashmir today. This is the ninth such killing of civilians in the past 2 weeks. And let's go across to Nazeer Masoodi. Nazeer, now again, increasingly a new terror wave, targeted killings. This is becoming Kashmir's new horror. What's the latest today?
Well, they were the back-to-back attacks, target attacks on innocent civilians who had come here to earn their living. Poor people, one Golgappa seller, there are so many from outside who come here every year, earn their living. They believe they earn better bucks here to take care of their families. Early this month, the Golgappa seller from Bihar was killed in Srinagar when three civilians, including a famous pharmacist, was killed. And now we see two more killings. At a time when police have been saying, look, they have launched a massive crackdown and detained over 900 people who are supposed, who are believed to be separatists, having separatist links. There have been series of encounters, to be precise, but police said 9 encounters in last 1 week, in which 13 local militants have been killed, and some of them, according to police, were involved in these targeted killings. Yet we see two innocent people were killed. Arvind Kumar Sah, a Golgappa seller, was shot dead, was fired from point blank in Eidgah area of Srinagar. A carpenter, Sagir Ahmed from UP, was working, earning his living in Pulwama. He was shot dead, again, fired from point blank. So innocent people being killed. There are many speculation, many people are talking many things, why these things are happening. But clearly these people are being killed who they are. They are outsiders. They are trying to drive them out. That looks like the aim. And we have seen even it frightened Kashmiri pandits after pharmacist's killing, Bindro's killing. And many people tried to leave this, valley, even as center and the state government, UT government, tried their best to prevent any kind of exodus. Sarah.
Nazeer Masoodi, we'll come back to you. This is the big story at this. How have we gotten here? That's the question. Joining us now, SP Ved, former DGP of Jammu and Kashmir, Lieutenant General Satish Dua, retired former Corps commander in Kashmir, former chief of the Integrated Defence Staff. We have Mohit Ban, spokesperson of the PDP, and Sujata Pandey, political analyst who supports the BJP. SP Ved, to you first, how have we got here? We now have the spate of killings of civilians in recent days. It has led to widespread unease. Teachers, medical practitioners, just as tourism was picking up. SP Ved, how have we gotten here?
Sara, I think the reasons could be multifold, and the change of strategy of the ISI handlers across on whose pretext all this is being done by terrorists. As I said, reasons could be multifold. Today, one Hindu has been killed and another Muslim has been killed. So it is clearly a message for outsiders that you are not welcome. If you recall, there was a narrative immediately after 370 and 35A was abrogated that outsiders will come and settle here. The demography of Kashmir will change. Now, this could be one of the reasons that outsider is not welcome. And all these people have been working, notwithstanding 370 and 35A abrogation. As Nazeer was saying, all these raidiwalas, all even the work laborers who work in the apple orchards, the construction workers, they all come from outside and have been for many, many years working in Kashmir, earning their livelihood. Now, this was one reason I personally feel it will put local people into a lot of hardships because absolutely, they will not get all these. Another reason could be because of last few years, this government and security forces had a lot of successes, and you see the overall law and order situation was improving. A narrative was being circulated that now things are improving. So you saw a bumper tourism picking up. You had 1 month, I think, 10 plus lakh tourists in 1 month, another 11 plus, and third month, this last month was about 11 plus.
Yes.
So, tourism picking up, then you had industrial policy announced by Government of India, I think one of the best in the country, which was, it had actually evoked a lot of response from the rest of the country. Many industrialists were trying to invest so that local youth...
So there's a message being sent out.
Yes. Now, there is a message that you are not welcome here. So because that has perplexed...
But who is sending out the message, and is the government in control? Can the government take back the narrative? That's the question here. Lieutenant General Satish Dua, this sounds like, you know, we're going back in time. I'll ask you, we should hear of civilian killings like this. Messages being sent out was way back in the 90s.
Absolutely. You said it. You said the right words. This is trying to go back to the 90s because they're trying to reinstill fear in the minds of the people. As Mr. Stivell just brought out, you know, things were moving towards normalcy, and ISI, separatists and the handlers and the terrorist Tanzims, and the handlers from across, everyone started getting concerned that people are getting used to a good life. So it is to reinstill fear on one hand, and on the other hand, there's also a message, not only to Kashmiri Pandits. I mean, when you have soft targets and targeted killings, this is also a message to not only to the Kashmiri Pandits, perhaps also to any other minorities who may want to migrate or who may want to return to Kashmir. So all in all, what is being done is to ruffle that. A new kind of tactics is being employed. And the new tactics is, the security forces have started calling, using the word hybrid terrorist. Today you see these boys who, incidents that have taken place, somebody comes up with a pistol or a grenade, they are not very well trained terrorists. It is easy to sort of get passing familiarity with pistols and grenades, the kind of enablers that are available on the internet. And they would actually, and my take is, they would, after carrying out a killing like that, an incident like that, they would actually throw the pistol away and merge into the society, making the job of the security forces that much more difficult. So we are back to the 90s, or that is the attempt.
Attempt here is to go, to take India back to the 90s, Jammu and Kashmir, where we were in the 90s. Mohit Bans, spokesperson of the PDP, this comes at a time in a week where we saw the RSS chief visit and claim that, you know, these increasing terrorist attacks and encounters that we're seeing are because the common people were reaping the benefits of the application of Article 370.
See, Sara, to say that common people are reaping the benefits of 370 would be too premature to say. You know, you have to hit the ground and visit the villages and the different towns in Kashmir to see that are they reaping any benefits or not. We have seen the recent visits from the central ministers and how they have been, you know, reinaugurating all the old projects, and the kind of facade of normalcy which the government has created has been punctured by the number of 32 targeted civilian attacks in past 1 year. So there is complete lawlessness on the ground. The administration has no clue that when, what it is happening. You know, the militants are killing people at their will and right in the heart of the city. So this absolutely proves that how lawlessness and how clueless the administration is about the modus operandi.
Okay.
And, you know, and hiding behind this Pakistan narrative every time is like surrendering to the narrative that we can't do anything. You know, Pakistan is doing this, Pakistan is doing that, and we are not able to counter anything.
Let's put that across to Sujata Pandey. Sujata, this really runs counter to those who say that abrogation of Article 370 would have solved all of our problems. It's really brought the government's claims of peace into question. Does the government have a handle on this right now? We are at a precipice.
Good evening, Sarah. So, to answer your question, I have to tell you that what is happening today is a replay of 1990s, where targeted killings were happening, where ethnic cleansing with the aim of ethnic cleansing.
Yes, Sujata, but what can the government do about this?
So, you know, so Sara, if you really want to listen to and we want to head to the solution of the Kashmir problem, we have to keep it aside of the politics, because it is the politics, if you see, whether it is, I won't name them, but we all know who all are praising, in fact, shielding people who are holding guns in their hands and killing innocent Muslims. And I have to tell you,
ma'am,
that the
see,
person...
enough of this shielding dialogue. Enough of this shielding narrative. Why don't you admit that you guys have failed? Why don't you guys admit that the central government and the state government has failed, squarely failed in protecting
Mohit Ban, please let her respond.
You can't say that.
Mohit Ban, please let Sujata Pandey respond.
What are you talking? You know, the abrogation of 370 has happened now. What was happening from 1990s? 62,000 people have been misplaced, have been forced to leave their house.
You know, so that is what we are saying, that abrogation of 370 has nothing to do with it. There is a conflict on the ground right now.
We're at an extremely difficult position where India stands on the brink. We seem like we could be turning back the clock. What can the government do to prevent this?
That is the reason when I said a problem, I won't call it a problem, the issues of Kashmir are not restricted to only politics. It is very much mixed with the social problems, and this is why, you know, channels like you, journalists like you, and people sitting here in the panel must rise above on this occasion and say,
"Look, there is no social problem. Again, there is a political problem. You must get it that Jammu and Kashmir is a political problem. There is no social problem in Jammu and Kashmir.
All right, this is a topic that we're going to continue to keep our focus on, because we want to ensure, we need to ensure, as a nation, as a country, we need to ensure that we do not lose the gains made over the last 30 years when it comes to Jammu and Kashmir. Thank you all for joining us tonight. I want to move on to the other big story coming in from the world of sports. It's exit Ravi Shastri and enter Rahul Dravid. That seems to be the direction that Indian cricket is moving in, as sources have told NDTV that Rahul Dravid will be the next coach of the Indian men's team, and he will take over the reins for the next 2 years post the ICC World Cup. So Rahul Dravid agreeing to come on board reportedly as India's head coach after Ravi Shastri. Is this just what the doctor ordered? We'll have Sharda Ogra joining us, senior cricket journalist, and Charu Sharma is with us, sports analyst, cricket commentator, director of the Pro Kabaddi League. Mr. Sharma, first to you, what do you make of this? And one big takeaway, at least, that, you know, we are moving away from having a foreign coach?
Hi there. For starters, do please call me Charu.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, we have moved away because, I mean, the last few years there has been no overseas coach. There's nothing wrong with either overseas coach or an Indian. There is, I think, a certain advantage having a homegrown coach because of just knowing the Indian psyche better. And the job of a coach, really, of a senior national team coach, is much more of a man manager. And if you extend that a bit, if I may use the term, and I don't mean it derogatory, an ego manager, because you have to bring all these people together. They are the best players in the land. Some of them are the best players in the world. As a coach, what can you possibly make them do which they don't already know? It's really just learning how to gel together and being comfortable together and managing all the different personalities in a team. I don't think Rahul is going to teach somebody how to bowl or how to field or how to whatever else on the cricket field. There's a lot of other support. There'll be bowling coaches, batting coaches, fielding coaches and everything else. But it's just a sort of an MD, general manager kind of role where you want to make sure that everybody's okay. Anybody needs any help, please come and talk to me. But it's very difficult at that level. Under 19, yes. Smaller teams, yes. Sure. But at the senior national level, everybody's a major global star. And you just have to make sure that if they need you for anything, that you're always open, accessible, and comfortable.
An extremely valid point. And so let me bring in Sharda Ogra here. Sharda, you know, the word Charu mentioned was ego management. So let me ask you then, what are the dynamics between Virat Kohli and Rahul Dravid? Everybody knows, you know, what happened with Anil Kumble. I mean, was Virat Kohli consulted? This is a team where Kohli, you know, mostly called the shots, or at least I should say till that Australia tour earlier this year.
There is no clarity as to how this has panned out, though it's very clear that the board, particularly I think Saurav Ganguly has a part in this, that they want Dravid to be in charge. Though you're reading reports in which the board is trying to present itself to say that, listen, Dravid is doing this because he has no other choice. And he does have a choice. His choice is to say no. But at the same time, they're saying that, look.
And he's been doing that for, I think, a couple of years, 5-6 years.
Exactly. They've been trying to do this. What this is with reference to Kohli and Dravid in the past, I think that at the moment you have to assume that both will say, fine, let's take this step ahead and see what happens. And Virat Kohli's career at this point in time, he's had a couple of runs where he hasn't scored 100 in a while and there's a lot going on. And at the same time, if you bring someone like Dravid in, you would think that he would be able to help Kohli in this through this particular phase. Hmm. And at the same time, because of his stature in the game, I don't think that they try and pull off the stunt, which it was a stunt against Kohli, which is what happened. And don't forget, the board at that time was different CEO. That was a terribly unsafe incident that happened. It's unlikely to happen at the same time.
Okay. Charu, I want to ask you, as what Sharda Ugra mentioned, she said there's a lack of clarity, right? Now, we have Rahul Dravid, everyone's going gaga, Mr. Nice Guy, great, And let me be honest, I don't really follow cricket, so which is why I think I'm in the right position to ask this question, right? When you're saying there's no clarity, there doesn't seem to be any appointment of, due diligence, no process, no interview, and, all that's fine. Rahul Dravid is a great guy. I'm sure this is what the doctor ordered. But from someone on the outside, I would ask, does this set a bad precedent, right? Are we bending rules? Are we setting a bad precedent in an already cliquish club where there doesn't seem to be any transparency when you're not following it as closely as all of you guys are?
Well, I suppose that would be relevant were it, if I may use the term, nobody. But, Rahul Dravid doesn't have to go sit in front of 10 people and say, excuse me, I played a bit of cricket and will you please look at me and look at my record and what have you. So in this case or in many such cases, there's no problem in appointing somebody you feel is the right man for the job. I mean, what are interviews after all anyway? You want him to apply and be one of the 20 people and then select him because you feel he's the best? This is fine. It's not a major breach of any protocol here. If the board wants to ask for applications, they are free to. If the board says, no, we want you, they are free to ask. And if that person agrees, that's fine. Because even now, Rahul will ask for several assistants. He doesn't have to go and say, okay, can we have applications for bowling coach, batting coach, this coach, that coach? He says, I want you, and I want you, and I want you. And you have to allow them that leeway, because after all, the responsibility is theirs. Now, if you throw somebody at the team, and if you throw somebody at Rahul saying, these are your assistant coaches, then you're not allowing him that freedom of operating with the people he wishes to operate with or he's comfortable with. So I don't have a problem with this protocol at all. The Indian Cricket Board is headed by somebody who's a very close friend and a colleague of Rahul who knows exactly what Rahul brings to the table. Rahul's been in the coaching world as well. You haven't plucked him from a non-coaching world. So everything points out, to good directions. And if Rahul is happy to take the job, that's a good sign because he's not accepting it reluctantly, one hopes. Although in the past he was sort of reluctant. Remember though, Sarah, it's a crown of thorns, the job of the Indian coach.
Sure.
It's a very high responsibility, very high delivery kind of job, which is based on people who you can't control. He's not going to go on the field. He's not going to bat a ball or whatever. So in the past, why did very sort of accomplished Indian players not accept the job? It's because they know, as Rahul will know, that you can't really influence the team inside the ground. I mean, they will lose, sure. They will win. If they win, great, thank you. If they lose, it's like, oh my God, terrible coach. So it's a crown of thorns, and I'm glad that he's accepted responsibility. He's a wonderful young man, and I'm sure he'll do well. It's just that the coach has a limited influence, Sarah. It's the players inside the field who are doing 98% of the work.
Sure.
So they work well, great. No player says that, oh, that coach, he's our coach, let's lose today.
Sure.
Or he's our coach, let's win today. I mean, they're all professionals.
Okay, Sharda, I'm almost out of time, but I do want to get your views also on that question because you've been smiling throughout. Yes, he's the best candidate. Yes, he makes total sense. And why not follow due process?
Sarah, I'm a bit of a pedant at this point, but I have to say that no due process is being followed inside the BCCI. Okay, firstly, the BCCI has not made an announcement regarding Dravid. So that's still not there.
Sure.
At the same time, the president and the secretary of the BCCI are illegally in their position in terms of what the court said about a year ago. So you're here working in a world of many rules being flaunted. Never mind being, never mind this process. Now, the BCCI can listen, we'll put up an advertisement and we'll do whatever, but we are operating in this this murky world of a lack of rules. Who cares about who cares about due diligence? Who cares about a professional set? So this is the world we are living in, and that's why we are all here discussing this story at the point, and all the best both to Dravid and to Holi, wherever the future.
All right. I'm sure this is probably a question on many people's minds outside of, that internal circle in the BCCI. But thank you all so much. A big day, a big move, a big day for Indian cricket and lovers of Indian cricket. Thank you all for joining us on Left, Right and Centre.